Hi, and welcome to the Writing and Marketing Show, brought to you by author Wendy H. Jones. This show does exactly what it says on the tin. It's jam-packed with interviews, advice, hints, tips, and news to help you with the business of writing. It's all wrapped up in one lively podcast, so it's time to get on with the show. And welcome to episode 58 of the Writing and Marketing Show with author, entrepreneur, Wendy H. Jones. So, what exciting's been happening this week in the world? Oh, before I tell you about the excitement that's been happening in my life this week, I'm going to say that today we're going to be speaking to award-winning author Chris Longmuir, and we're going to be talking about why we should be writing or considering writing historical fiction as authors, and I'm excited to do that. So the exciting news in my life is that I've actually had my COVID vaccine, which I'm very excited about. I wasn't quite so excited about 4 o'clock this morning because I had a temperature. It can make you feel a bit off for 48 hours, and I'm in that process at the moment. So I'm dosed up on aspirin and paracetamol and bringing you this today because I didn't want you not to have a podcast, and I didn't want not to interview Chris. So the introduction is going to be very short this week because I'm not feeling 100%, as they say, but don't worry, I'll be fine in 48 hours. And trust me, it's worth it to get the actual vaccine. And some people just feel a bit flu-y for 48 hours. Others have no problem whatsoever. So I would encourage you to get the vaccine, guys. Don't worry about the fact that, you know, I'm not feeling so chirpy. So what of Chris? Let's hear about her. Chris is an award-winning novelist, and she's published 3 novels in her Dundee crime series. Night Watcher, the first book in the series, won the Scottish Association of Writers Pitlochry Award, and the sequel, Deadwood, won the Dundee International Book Prize as well as the Pitlochry Award. Missing to Believe Dead is the third book in the series. Chris also writes the Kirsty Campbell mysteries set during and after the First World War, featuring Dundee's first policewoman. And she has recently published the first book in a suffragette mystery series set during 1909 in Dundee. She has also published 2 non-fiction books, The Nuts and Bolts of Self-Publishing, A Step-by-Step Guide to Publishing and Crime Fiction, and Crime Fiction and the Indie Contribution, you'll have to forgive me today, guys, an examination of crime fiction, as well as an evaluation of independently published books in this genre. Her crime novels are set in Dundee, Scotland, and have been described as scary, atmospheric page-turners. Chris also writes historical sagas, short stories and historical articles which have been published in America and Britain. However, Assault Splash Cradle is the only historical saga currently published. Writing is like an addiction to her, Chris says. She goes into withdrawal without it. She's currently working on a new Kirsty Campbell novel. Chris is a member of the Society of Authors, the Crime Writers Association and the Scottish Association of Writers. She designed her own website and confesses to being a techno geek who builds computers in her spare time. And Chris is a very interesting lady. So without further ado, let's get on with the show and hear from Chris. And we have Chris with us. Welcome, Chris.
Ah, thank you for having me, Wendy. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. It's always a pleasure to chat to you, Chris, because I have to say, in terms of writing, you do all sorts, and it's great because, you know, you cover contemporary, you cover historical, you cover nonfiction. So it's always nice to have a chat to you.
You make me sound good.
You are very good. I hope you're sitting comfortably, are you?
Well, comparatively comfortable.
And with an accent like yours, I can tell that you're in the UK somewhere. Where are you?
I'm in Montrose, Scotland.
Montrose, hey.
Scottish accent you're hearing.
It is. That's great because we've had some Americans recently, so it's lovely to have someone more local. And not only do you have a Montrose accent, but your books are set in Dundee, so we're good to go. So now that you're sitting comfortably, you're ready to be interviewed.
I believe the first word, interrogated, that's more like it.
I feel like I'm back in the army. Nah, it's going to be very relaxed and easy.
You never left the army, Wendy.
Yeah, I love discussing you know, I love discussing historical fiction, so it's a good topic to be covering today, really. I want to start by asking what you would consider to be historical fiction.
Well, I suppose for me, historical fiction is anything set in the past, although I believe nowadays it's anything that's over 50 years old. But to me, 50 years earlier is still in my lifetime, so it doesn't really feel historical to me. So I would say anything set in the past, any story set in the past.
Yeah, I have to say, I've heard 50 is what I always heard, and then I've heard recently that they consider anything that's over 30 years to be history.
That's even worse.
I know it is, isn't it? And I was speaking to somebody the other day, and they said they were writing historical fiction. It was set in the 1990s, and I thought, hey, that's not historical fiction, but it is. It's historical fiction if it's in the past. You're right.
Yeah. Yes. So both you and I are historical characters.
We are. We're historical characters. People could write our life stories and they'd be classed as history. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
How to age yourself in one fell swoop. So, I mean, I love historical fiction. I love reading it and I'm passionate about it. At the moment, I'm just binge reading historical fiction. What do you think it is about historical fiction that endears it to readers?
Well, to me, it's the story. I mean, there are different types of historical fiction. And if I read a historical novel with a language that's too archaic, it turns me off. So I much prefer my historical novels to be written in a fairly modern style, but without the modern language, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It makes it more interesting. But it's the story that pulls you in, and it's the fact it's set in a time past. You know, a time that you're not familiar with. I find it's just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I love it as well, you know, and I think you're right. It needs to be accessible. The writing needs to be accessible.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a difference between reading historical fiction that's been written by someone today and reading fiction that was written in the past.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, a lot of people do like, you know, novels which were written donkey's years ago, but I find a lot of them are too slow for me. I like something a bit faster paced, and although I'm writing historical, I like to make sure they are written in a faster paced style than they were in the past.
Yeah. I want to just take that a bit further about, I meant to say, ask a double question here, really, because it endears it to readers. But what do you think it is that endears it to writers? Why do writers want to write historical fiction?
Well, not every writer wants to write historical fiction, but the ones who do, I think, have a keen interest and what happened in the past. I mean, my interest is basically in the social conditions, you know, how people lived. I'm not particularly interested in the kind of history that was taught at school, you know, with dates and, you know, everything like that. I like to know what was going on, you know, what's happening in the world at that time in terms of the ordinary people, not the nobility, not the aristocrats, you know. There is a place for that kind of fiction, but not in my books.
Well, you know, and that's the good thing. We all write the books we want to write, and readers read the books they want to read. And there's a place for all of it.
Yeah, there is.
I think that's what you're saying, you know. There's a place for readers that want to read about the social classes of the time.
Yeah.
Upper classes, lower classes. They all have their different emphasis, I suppose.
Yeah. I like to write about the man on the street, you know, the ordinary people. Upstairs, downstairs, I would have great difficulty with the upstairs bit. I'd be more inclined to go for the downstairs bit. Although, I mean, things like, those kind of novels and TV shows do attract a lot of people. And they attract me as well, but not to the extent that I would want to imitate them.
Yeah.
You know, the upstairs, downstairs thing, you know.
Absolutely.
The class, you know, the different classes. There was a distinct class separation, you know, going back a bit. But I prefer The Man in the Street, you know, where class didn't really matter unless they came in under the influence of someone of an upper class.
Yeah, the class system did lend itself to some very interesting storylines, that's for sure.
So
I know you're saying that, you know, not every writer should write historical fiction, but why do you think it is that a writer should consider writing historical fiction?
Well, there's so many interesting stories rooted in the past, and the fact that they're set in a different time, you know, it can add an extra kind of bit of oomph to the story. You know, it's just something, but you have to have an interest. You have to have an interest in the past. There's no point in writing a historical novel if you've no interest in what happened way back. You know, I would love to kind of set myself down somewhere, perhaps at the beginning of the 20th century, and just walk the streets to see what was happening, although it might be a kind of a scary place in some of the areas I like to write about.
Yep, it certainly would. But, you know, I think taking it a bit further as well, I mean, historical fiction, I think it's interesting, but it's also a challenge, I would say. Because writing, I'm not saying writing contemporary fiction is easy, because it's not, trust me. We both write contemporary fiction and we know it's not. But I think there's a particular challenge to doing something that's set in the past.
Yeah. I kind of fell into it by accident, I think, because I was writing contemporary thrillers. And quite frankly, if I'd still been with my publisher, I'd be in the box that said contemporary thrillers, and I would never have written historical ones.
Yeah.
But I used to write a lot of articles for magazines. I wrote for The Highlander in America, and I wrote for different magazines. And I wrote historical articles, social history, not, you know, upper class stuff. And a lot of my kind of historical interest came out of that. For example, my Kirsty Campbell mysteries started because I researched the early women's police services for articles, and I got pulled into them. And the same with the suffragettes. I researched for articles and got pulled into that as well, and the interest kind of developed from there, and that's what actually led on to my historical novels. So you could say I fell into it by accident.
Yeah, well, that very often happens. That seems to have happened to me, hence the reason that I've got a historical fiction interest these days, because I'm writing a historical, I think it's called faction these days, I've been told by a publisher, which is fiction based on fact.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you've alluded to this already, so I want to tease it out a bit further. What's usually the starting point for anyone who wants to write historical fiction?
Well, going back to what I said earlier, it's an interest in the past. But, I mean, I suppose for any writer, what you need is a really good story. And where you set it is up to you. You know, you can set it in the present, you can set it in the past. But if you want to set it in the past, you really need to know something about the past. Like reading historical fiction. Read a lot. Read a lot of historical fiction, read a lot of non-fiction, and you can get sucked into the actual time, you know, the time scale that you're talking about, the time scale you're writing about. And that's basically it, I suppose.
No, yeah, it's a good point, because the starting point, I think you're right, you need to be interested in the story. Yeah, I think if you're not interested in the story, then it's going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
Because I think you'd get bored very quickly.
Oh, yeah. But it's a kind of a combination as well, because you need your story, but also if you're researching the past, that can often throw up stories as well. So it's kind of a two-way thing, a two-way street. You can often hit on, you know, storylines just through your research.
Yeah.
So that's quite useful.
That's a really good point, actually, because research can take you down some rabbit holes, as you've discovered, because it takes me neatly on to my next question, which is about you chose the suffragettes as a starting point for your historical fiction series. Although they are hysterical as well. They're very good. historical fiction series. why the suffragettes? And I want to ask another bit of that question, is what about it? What about the suffragettes in that era still fascinates us so much?
I think because it was a time of great change. You know, it was great change for women. Prior to the First World War, I mean, women were very restricted in their lives. I mean, men were the breadwinners, they were the bosses, you know, a wife had to do what she was told. I mean, there were some exceptions because you did get shop girls and factory workers pre-First World War. But in the main, you know, a woman was kind of a secondary thing. I mean, they were there to keep the house, to have children, to bring the children up, you know, that kind of thing. Yes. And the First World War kind of changed all the... Well, the suffragettes were before the First World War, of course, but they were women who wanted that change. Now, that change didn't come about until the First World War, but the suffragettes were fighting for that change for years before then. They didn't want to be a kind of an addendum to the men. They wanted to be involved in politics. They wanted to be able to, vote for their parliamentary members and bring up women's issues. And this was resisted all along the line. That's what caused all the kind of, the things they did, you know, the bombs and the fire raising, because they were getting nowhere and they decided they had to be, you know, they had to make a point. They would probably be labelled as terrorists nowadays. Because some of the things they did were no different to terrorists nowadays. Just they didn't have the kind of sophisticated weapons that the terrorists nowadays have. They used what they had, fire, bombs, you name it.
Their own bodies. Didn't one of them chuck themselves under the king's horse or something?
That's right. I wrote an article about her, but that was Emily Davidson. The suffragettes, I mean, there were three suffragette societies. There was the suffragists, who, and then there were the suffragettes who were the Pankhurst lot. But there was another organisation span out from the Pankhursts organisation, because they didn't like the extreme measures that the WSPU were doing. So they came out and they were militant, but they weren't just as militant as the Pankhurst lot. Now, the Pankhursts were very, very authoritarian, and they ran the organisation like an army. Everyone had to do what they were told. Now, Emily Davidson started to do things that she wasn't told to do. She was doing things off her own back and they didn't like her. So they kind of expelled her from the organisation. But when Emily Davidson threw herself under the king's horse and died, they took her back as their martyr. So there was a lot of kind of two-facedness there.
Yeah, they wanted emancipation as long as everybody did what they told them to do.
That's why the Women's Freedom League split off in a sense as well, because they didn't like the authoritarian stance that was being taken. And my characters are not in the Pankhursts, the WSP. I always get mixed up with the initials. They were in the Women's Freedom League, the break-off branch. Basically, my suffragettes can be militant, but they're not killers. You know, the extreme stuff. They'll break the windows and things like that, but they won't plant a bomb.
It's a fascinating era.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Yeah. And it was the suffragettes that led me into my Kirsty Campbell series, which actually I wrote before my new suffragette one, because it was the suffragette societies that set up the first women's police services. And when I wrote my first book with my pioneer police woman, Kirsty Campbell, I had a publisher at that time for it, which I got out of the deal because the editors there just did not believe that suffragettes could be in the Women's Police Service, and they just hadn't done their background research because it was the Women's Suffragette Societies that set up the Women's Police Services in the beginning.
Brilliant. I love it. I really do. So moving on slightly, if someone mm-hmm. is thinking about writing historical fiction, what would be your top three tips for them?
Historical. Have a passion for the history. Have a passion for the time you're writing about. But other than that, it's just the same as any other writer writing in any time. Have a good story. Have good characters. Make sure they fit the settings. And basically, you know, research. When you're talking about research, I'm thinking the small things. Like, what was the price of a newspaper?
Yeah.
What would you pay for your rent? What would your wages be? You know, that kind of thing. What would you pay for a pie, a Dundee pie in a pie shop? You know, that kind of thing. A pay, yeah. that kind of thing. Yeah. One book I read fairly recently, a very good book, very good story. He wrote in the style of Ken Follett, and I loved it. But he threw me when the main character tipped the bellboy the equivalent of a year's wages. So basically, he hadn't researched his money.
Yeah, it can be a bit tricky, I have to say. You've got to get it right. Mm-hmm. And I discovered something recently. You know, we're reading a newspaper that it was set during the D-Day landings for various reasons, yeah? And we were absolutely obsessed in Dundee about constipation during that time. It can tell you all sorts reading newspapers.
Yeah.
You know, well, how much would that newspaper be, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it was about tuppence, I think, at the time I'm writing in my books. Yeah. But again, the Dundee Courier, which is the main paper for this area, you know, papers nowadays, they have headlines, you know, on the front page, you know, everything's cool. The Dundee Courier had nothing but adverts on its front page.
I know, loads of adverts.
Of columns of
mainly
adverts.
For constipation. We always had a big problem with that in Dundee in the past. Although I have to say, on the D-Day landings, they really did have the D-Day landings on the front page. Or no, it wasn't the D-Day landings, it was VE Day. Sorry, I've got it wrong. VE Day. They really did have VE Day on the front page, in all fairness to the Dundee Courier, before they sue us, you know. So, can you tell us?
I'm old enough to remember the Dundee Courier with all the adverts and the columns on the front page.
Oh my goodness.
So it was a shock to the system when they went over to the kind of the broadsheets, you know, what the broadsheets were doing.
Yeah, yeah. So can you tell us about your own historical fiction as well?
My own historical fiction. Well, I started out, as I say, with my Pioneer Policewoman. I've got my Kirsty Campbell mysteries, which are not quite as dark as my contemporary thrillers, but dark enough. And I set it, my Kirsty was one of the first policewomen who joined up with the Metropolitan Police in 1914. She worked under Margaret Damer Dawson. In 1919, she is seconded to Dundee to become Dundee's first policewoman. Now, Dundee in 1919 did have a policewoman. She was a Mrs. Thompson. But Mrs. Thompson was rather a matronly figure, and nothing like the Kirsty Campbell of my Kirsty Campbell mysteries. So I have Kirsty in Dundee as Dundee's first policewoman. Now, at that time, although there were quite a few policewomen in England, there were only three policewomen in Scotland. No, two, not three, two. Two. One was Mrs. Thompson in Dundee and one was Emily Miller in Glasgow. So Mrs. Thompson, I ejected her from her post and put Kirsty Campbell in there. And I started writing mysteries about Kirsty. So that's where she is. But I didn't. The second book, I took her back to 1917, the middle of the First World War at Gretna. And that book is kind of a mixture of murder mystery, spying, sabotage. And I even bombs. And I even have an assassination attempt on the king, who very nicely decided to visit Gretna in May 1917. So I stretched my book out in terms of time scales to make sure I got his visit in so I could have an assassin.
It was very kind of the king to realise that you'd need that visit in the future.
But for that book, the research, I was talking about research earlier, and I spent 3 days on YouTube learning how to drive a vintage car of the time. Now, basically, and out of that research, I wrote one paragraph. But wow. I believe I could have driven that car after those 3 days. So basically, that's my Kirsty Campbell mysteries. There's three books in it. The Death Game, which is the first one when she comes to Dundee in the beginning. Devil's Porridge, which takes her back to 1917 at Gretna. And the third one, she's back in Dundee in 1919 for Death of a Doxy. And you know what a doxy is, don't you?
Well, isn't it a prostitute or something?
A lady of the night, yes.
A lady of the night.
That's a polite word. So, well, Death of a Doxy.
I'm reading a historical fiction book at the moment, and they've just gone down to the docks. And the main character is a lady, you know, she comes from an estate, but she's a private investigator, don't ask. But the man's like, oh, I'm not entirely sure I should take you down to Dock Street. And she goes, oh, why? What's going on? Is there sailors or something? And he doesn't want to tell her. So you might want to tell them what Dock Street's famous for.
There was one lady in Montrose, it's a long time ago now, and she used to go down to the docks. She used to go to the boats. And she went to this boat one time and they paid her, she went up to the bank with masses and masses of money. And it turned out to be worth about 10 shillings. She'd been round the whole boat.
Oh my goodness.
And another time she went down, she went round the whole boat and then they threw her over the side.
Oh my goodness. See, things like that are fascinating. This is why people should do, anybody should write historical fiction, because the research takes you to stuff like that.
Now, that could come into historical fiction, because I believe that would be coming up to 50 years ago. But anyway, coming back to the books, Kirsty Campbell, she had a backstory. And the backstory always fascinated me, her suffragette history. So my new series I've started is a suffragette mysteries. And I've got Kirsty in it, but she's part of a duo. It's going to be Kirsty and Ethel. I have three of them in the first book, but Martha will get left behind for the second book. So I have Kirsty, Ethel and Martha in the first book, and they form together as Martha is a seasoned suffragette, Ethel is a new suffragette, and Kirsty is just thinking about it. So the three of them come together, and of course there are murders, suffragettes are being killed in Dundee, the police aren't interested, so they decide to investigate. So that's the first book in the suffragette mysteries. I'll take Ethel, at the end of it, Ethel and Kirsty are getting out of Dundee, Martha's staying behind, and Ethel and Kirsty will go on. I'm not entirely sure in my own mind yet whether it'll be Glasgow, Aberdeen or Edinburgh, but I intend to take them to the various places in Scotland for the following books.
Brilliant. Mm. And they're very good books, I have to say. I love them. But I do like a nice suffragette mystery. And as I said right at the very beginning, Chris is an absolutely brilliant writer as well. So it's well worth grabbing these books. And it takes me to my very final question, which is sad because I could talk about this all day. Where can my listeners find out more about you and your books?
Well, I do have a website, chrislongmuir.co.uk. Now, on the website, you'll find a list of all my books. You will also be able to read the first chapter of all the books, as well as one or two kind of review snippets. So that's probably the best place if you want to find out about them. But of course, you know, they're on most of the online bookselling sites. They're on Amazon, they're on Kobo, they're on, you name it, they're there. Watersons. You'll find them there as well. The last one, the Dangerous Destiny, the new book one of the suffragette mysteries, it is only on Amazon. As you know, the ebooks and paperbacks, you get the paperback anywhere, but the ebook is only on Amazon because I've rolled it for the Kindle
Unlimited.
Kindle Unlimited. So basically, none of the rest of the books are ebooks are on there. They're widely distributed, but the Dangerous Destiny, the suffragette mystery, the first suffragette mystery, is on KU. So if you subscribe to KU, you can actually read it for nothing.
Hey, that's fantastic. Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking time out of writing your latest Kirsty Campbell mystery to join me today.
Thank you for having me, Wendy. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. I could chat to you for hours, but, you know, people might not want us just to be having a normal conversation for the next hour and a half because, you know, they might lose the will.
Yeah.
But I'm always willing to talk about historical fiction, and I will have you back at some point because I'd really, really like to do an episode where we just talk about the suffragettes, if that's all right.
That's fine.
Yeah, and then people can use it for their own research.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Chris, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of another show. It was really good to have you on the show with me today. I'm Wendy H. Jones, and you can find me at wendyhjones.com. You can also find me on Patreon, where you can support me for as little as $3 a month, which is less than the price of a tea or coffee. You go to patreon.com/WendyHJones. I'm also Wendy H. Jones on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Thank you for joining me today, and I hope you found it both useful and interesting. Join me next week when I will have another cracking guest for you. Until then, have a good week and keep writing, keep reading, and keep learning.